Hey, everybody, welcome to Bass University TV. We are down here at the Bassmaster Classic, and everything is happening down here. It's always so exciting. We get to talk about the best of the best, talk to the best of the best, learn, and see things that you just can't see anywhere else. So we're glad you guys are with us, and we've got a great cast here today again. Here at the Bass University TV, and I got a guest, Miles Burkhoff. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great.
Old friend of mine from years ago,
yeah.
And we've been friendly out on tour. Got to meet you through a lot of these shows.
Mm-hmm.
You took off with a new TV show a few years ago, and now you're tearing it up out on tour. So it's awesome to see.
Man, it's been a great ride. I mean, I met you guys the first time I went to a Bass University down in Florida, and so you know, in that instance, I was just, you know, still absorbing everything that I could. I mean, I still am, but you know, you guys, I've known you guys for a long time, and it's been a long road.
Did you just say you were a Bass University student?
I was
in
See
Florida.
That? I remember Scott Martin, Ish Monroe was there. There was several guys, of course.
Was Peter T there at that one?
I think Peter T may have been there.
That was one of our very first ones. We went to Florida.
Wow. An alumni. I love it.
And yep. And also, of course, again, here we have the great Pat Renwick with us from Straycast.
Hello.
Good to see you again today, buddy.
Good morning, everybody.
We survived last night at the Classic.
We did.
You know how crazy that can be. And BTC.
Yep.
Pulling strings in the back.
That's right. And The Ginger Ninja.
Right.
Ginger Ninja.
and the great Jeff Olson.
Yes. The giant Jeff Olson.
Usual. He is rather large.
He is a large man.
Yeah. Have you passed 7 feet yet, Jeff? No, you're hanging just under that. It's pretty close. But, hey, it's good to be here. You know, we were talking briefly coming into this, and I have been watching. You're out on the FLW tour,
mm-hmm.
and you're fishing at the top level, and You know, if you might read these stats on the FLW website, they're incorrect. It's got them listed at fifth place. We're giving them fourth
number
here
four.
On Bass University.
Round up.
No decimals. There's no decimals
right.
at Bass U.
The tie break, I decide. You're fourth place over on
tie
the
FLW. Tie goes to the rookie.
to the alumni.
to the Bass U alumnus.
Tie goes to the alumni.
Holding top four, top five in the Angler of the Year race over at FLW. With three tournaments under your belt, that's a lot of points that you have amassed.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard for guys to catch you.
Well, yeah, as far as Rookie of the Year, I've got a good cushion, but we still have four tournaments ahead of us. So there's a lot that can happen, and I can't let my guard down. I have to stay diligent and fish strong.
Tell me about these upcoming tournaments. So you got something you really like or something you've never been to?
I love them all. The one that scares me is my home lake, Chickamauga.
Uh-oh.
Because we're recent transplants to Chattanooga, and so everybody has high expectations. But really, the TVA is still probably my weakest link in my fishing. But that time of year sets up really well for me. I've learned a lot about the TVA in recent years. But we also have a Grand Lake. I leave
That's
next
gonna be
Saturday.
A good one, buddy.
Yeah. Grand Lake, yeah. I hear a lot of great things about it, and it seems to fit my power fishing style. Mm-hmm. So, and all these other events have been really just hole sitting events, you know, just real, you have to be real patient, and I can do that too, but the power fishing, you know, lakes are the ones I'm really excited about, and Grand is probably the best, other than Champlain too. We also have Cherokee.
Champlain's on the schedule?
Yep.
And Cherokee.
Yep.
And of course, wow!
They did it good
schedule.
This year.
They did
it, man.
They did an outstanding schedule this year. Yes. I was really—I saw that window of opportunity. I said, "I got to jump through it and get on the FLW tour because their schedule is rocking it today."
They really do a good job with the schedule. The coast is the Northeast schedules. I haven't been able to fish them for a couple of years, and
right.
it's always at the best bodies of water at the best times of year. It's amazing, but you're going to Chickamauga next. So am I.
Yeah.
For the Bassmaster Open. Are we before you or after you?
You're right after.
Right after.
So take notes.
Perfect. Perfect. Take notes. I'm
Watch
expecting,
miles.
I'm expecting, beans we're talking about sonar and GPS, I'm expecting GPS points to be texted my way immediately following that derby.
I might be fishing it, so I'd happily share. I'd
He's
happily share spots with you.
I
happily share spots with you.
I see.
I understand. There's a few community holes on that lake. That
oh my gosh, that lake is nothing but community holes. Like literally, I moved there, found all the spots by myself, And then I'd be like, I just found the juice. And then all of a sudden, somebody else pulls up. Yeah, it's
16
like,
locals.
It's like crazy. It's like flocks of like crows coming. Yeah, it's crazy out there.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we're going to be there in May, yeah. Or, right? That's is that going to be a ledge bite, or
it's
is that
be
too early?
Conditions for you to use your electronics out there on the ledge. I mean, most of the fish are going to be off the beds and on the ledge. They hit the ledges really, really fast. All those current breaks, they go very, very quick. Yeah, and in mass, you know, big schools of them. So I think that it's going to be a really good offshore bite during that time of year. And you know, you can still catch them shallow, but it's going to be one offshore.
Okay.
In some capacity. I don't mean necessarily deep,
yep.
But I mean, you know, current breaks, main river stuff.
Excellent. Well, awesome. That's a great segue because Miles, here, your nickname is Sonar.
Yep. Look at that.
And you're here today to teach our guys about Sonar, teach us about Sonar.
Yeah.
And you said something I asked you, and I'm going to ask you again right now.
Okay.
What electronics are you using on your boat?
So this year was really exciting for me because I'm a big proponent of choosing the right tool for the right job. And that doesn't necessarily mean going with one brand overall, you know, necessarily. Of course, every brand makes a great product, and that's why I end up using multiple brands. I actually work with a company, a retailer called BassBoatElectronics.com, and they sell all the major brands, and they set me up with a Humminbird, two Lowrances, and a Garmin. So I run three different brands.
Got it covered.
Wow.
So I can, you know, I do have a little bit of expertise in the different technology that's available, even if it's just with one brand, you know, that has proprietary technology.
Right.
Yeah.
So explain to me and all the viewers why Humminbird is a far superior sonar and GPS unit.
They are an excellent unit. I started out using Humminbird units. I won't lie, they're great because they have a very simple interface. People seem to work with them really well. They're easy to kind of go through the different options. They have the presets on a lot of their units, and so they are a really good unit to use. And their mega imaging is outstanding. I mean, that technology of using, you know, that really high frequency signal creates really good images on downscan and side imaging.
Excellent. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, we work with Humminbird.
Yeah,
we love
yeah.
Humminbird. We know they make a great product. But how do you use each brand? And tell us about that. How and why are you using these technologies?
The setup that I have is I've got a Humminbird in the dash. Mm-hmm. The Humminbird is great. It's an isolated system for me. I don't have it connected to anything else. So if anything goes wrong, the Humminbird is kind of my rock.
It's the root.
It's the root. So that's what I use. I use that primarily for my mapping. You know, I use my Navionics maps on there, turn on the sonar chart layer, and then I use it for my 2D sonar through hole. I actually, unfortunately, took the side imaging off of it. You know, that transducer is not working for me because I'm using it on the Lowrance right now, just the way it kind of sets up. But then I have two Lowrance units. Those are kind of the backbone of my waypoint management, my navigation, my fine-tuning, finding the fish and the structure and the cover that I'm looking to fish. That's what I use because Lowrance does a really good job at managing waypoints and tracks and things like that. They're really good with that. And so I have those two talking to each other. But then on the bow, you know, when you get up on the bow, you really want a tool that allows you to see as much as humanly possible.
Sure.
You know, you want to be able to you know, what's in front of the boat. And Humminbird did an excellent job with, you know, their 360 imaging. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't have 360, but I have a Garmin on the bow that utilizes Panoptix Live Scope. And that forward-looking sonar that I'm sure that both Humminbird and the other brands out there are going to, you know, adopt, obviously, because it's a great technology, and that's kind of the deal right now. It's outstanding for being able to look in front of the boat in real time and see fish, structure, cover, whatever you're looking for. You can see where the grass gets thicker, where it starts to, you know, where you have a solid wall of grass that just dissipates. At Seminole, the most recent event on Seminole, I was using it in 25 foot of water fishing a creek ledge in Spring Creek.
Wow.
And lots of timber. So, but I found this one area that had a very steep drop with the Panoptix Live Scope. so I could just kind of comb around, find exactly where it got steepest and where it had the most trees growing on it, and I could actually see the fish swimming on that drop.
Wow.
And I can make that precise cast and be able to catch that fish. So it really allows you to fine-tune everything on the bow. But that kind of brings me to the next point is, you know, Panoptix shows you everything, or that forward-looking sonar is what we should call it, because it's not, you know, everybody's going to be able to utilize this technology in different brands in the future. But it's essentially, it shows you too much. Like,
wow.
Sometimes you just are captivated by it. You just constantly look at it, and
it shows you fish
it
you
shows
can't
you
catch
everything.
Or
yeah, you wouldn't believe the biomass that's in these areas that you're not getting bit in.
Really?
Yeah.
It's overwhelming.
It can be overwhelming, and like any tool, any sonar technology, any electronics that we use, you need to be able to just take the information with a grain of salt, mm-hmm. and not get too caught up in it. You need to use it as a tool and not let it use you, you know.
Yeah.
Like a video game.
Right, right. You can't get too caught up in that, because ultimately what's going to catch that fish is that next cast. And so in your decision making throughout the day. So you need to make sure that you kind of are able to understand the strengths and weaknesses of this technology, whether it's 2D sonar, side imaging, downscan, or forward-looking sonar. And use that to your advantage.
Is that do you see that coming in as the next phase in technology, where it will say, you can catch this one, and you can't catch that one? Don't bother.
I'm waiting.
Keep moving.
I'm waiting for the genetic imprinting.
Yes.
where it's just like, that is a bass right there. This right here is a gar and a catfish.
How about they're pre-weighed for you too?
Exactly.
This is a 6.5. That one's a 3.8. Yeah.
So
right there.
So you got to. I guess you got to use your experience, right?
Yeah.
If you see fish that are marking as small, you can say, oh, these aren't bass. If you see that they're really giant fish, you say, all right, well, these can't be bass.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's one of the biggest questions I get is how do you distinguish a bass from other species? And sometimes it gets really hard. It's not, you know, cut and dry. You know, it's a gray area, you know, and it just takes time kind of understanding how they relate to the bottom and to cover. Generally, as a general rule, like if I'm going out on Chickamauga, what I'm looking for is fish that are stacked, you know, front to back, you know, behind each other, you know, they're not stacked on top of each other. If you see some kind of vertical pattern, that's either a you know, on your 2D sonar, it could be a tree, you know.
Right, right.
It could be like white bass or crappie or something.
Yellow
like
perch
that.
Show up that way sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, they do this weird, you know, top-down approach. Mm-hmm. But bass tend to really be focused on the bottom a lot of the time. I mean, of course, spots, you know, when they're suspended. Bass, when they're suspended, you know, get that way.
Mm-hmm.
But on the bottom, and then and they look a lot like catfish. Like a lot of times,
really?
I'll run around and find schools of what have to be catfish. I mean, you'll come back and you'll fish it, and you're like, why am I not getting bit?
Yeah.
And then you'll come back and your line will be covered in slime. But they look exactly like the bass. Wow.
That giveaway.
Yeah, yeah.
So bass really do relate to the bottom. Very similar to like a channel catfish would.
Gotcha. Yep. When you're doing the I notice I've seen you do it, I've seen a lot of other guys do it on ledges, and when you're cruising by those areas, you're able to determine or distinguish, maybe these fish are, they'll bite, maybe they're active, maybe they're not. I've seen you just pass stuff by. How do you know?
Well, it has a lot to do with the positioning of where they're at on a particular type of structure, especially when it comes to current. You know, current, they're going to be a little bit closer to the front, and they're going to be, you know, they're going to be raring to go, ready to eat, you know, with their mouths open. Sometimes they start kind of getting tighter when they want to eat, but looser when they start, they're in a bad mood.
Right. So they're dispersed more, in other words. When
and I'm still, like I said, I'm still learning the TVA and the way that they react. But I think the biggest thing is if you see suspended fish, they're some of the hardest to catch. And I think we can all agree on that, is that it is really hard to get a suspended fish.
I leave them alone.
Yeah. Well, and there are tricks that, you know, and we have seminars on Bass University TV dedicated exclusively on how guys have figured out interesting ways to catch suspended fish, because like you just alluded to, Pat,
scared.
I would see suspended fish, I'd run from them, you know, like it's not happening, I'm going to the bank, you know, that kind of stuff. But here's a tip for you guys that has helped me dramatically in my sonar, is when I'm catching fish, Like we saw Ike and Ellie live on the Classic this morning. When I'm actively catching fish, I do something that's really hard to do. As I see Don Barone giving me a hard time over there from
he's making
the great
faces
writer
at
from
you.
Bassmaster. And I'm losing my train of thought. Thanks, Don. When I'm catching them, I stop fishing and I drive over them.
Yeah, to see.
To see what they look like. Mm. To see what an active school of fish that's actually biting.
Yeah.
And the size that I'm catching. I already know, right? I've caught 2 4-pounders. I know they're 4-pounders. I know they're feeding. I know they're biting. I drive right over top of them.
Yeah.
And I see how the arches are, how they relate to the habitat. And that really helps me.
That's
when I'm fishing.
Really good tip. Because it's really important, just like sight fishing, to know what their body language is. And they tell you, you know, what their body language is to a certain level through your sonar technology.
Right.
But it's amazing.
But you have to be insane to stop catching 4-pounders and drive over the school and disperse them.
That explains you.
But you learn so much.
not normal.
But listen to this, too. I mean, Pete, think about it, man. That's a long way that you've come because Pete probably was in that spoon plugging era too. I mean, way back, but we didn't even have electronics, man. I mean, think about that. Yeah. Perry.
I was using the lead line.
Yeah, you know, the lead core.
I've been around a while.
we all have.
But the thing that I wanted to think about or ask you about because I've not used LiveScope, I've not used PanOptics. Now, it's live. It's real time when your transducer is pointed at your target.
Yes.
How does it manage when clearly you're going to deal with a wave, wind, you're going to have to rotate and move that transducer. How does it respond? How do you manage that situation?
That's how you – so essentially how I kind of explain it is it's intended for the next cast. So essentially, you know, I had to deal with wind Seminole to a certain extent. So what you have to do is take the foot off the trolling motor for just a second for boat positioning, do a real quick sweep, find exactly where you need to cast, make that cast, and then get back on the trolling motor and maintain. So it's just a split second that you're just making a sweep real quick, finding that right cast, and then you can get back to boat positioning because that's really key.
Sure.
But the great thing about it, and I think that a lot of people think of it as possibly a weakness, is that it's a very thin beam. You know, it's a very narrow beam that's being shot out. So it's not very wide, which makes it great because you can make precise casts because a normal sonar cone will actually shoot off. It actually gets a lot of information. Like 83 kilohertz frequency actually is a 1-to-1 frequency. So you get if you're in 20 foot of water, it's about 20 feet wide. So you get a lot of information in there. But with forward-looking sonar,
it's got to be tight.
You know exactly what cast to make, so there's no wasted casts.
Pretty accurate.
Yeah, awesome. Exactly. So that's kind of the difference. And if you don't mind, I'll kind of explain, you know, what the differences between the different sonar technology are.
Please,
absolutely.
So because that's kind of relevant to what we're talking about. 2D sonar, like I said, is a cone-shaped beam. You know, we know that it shoots these cone-shaped frequencies down there, and whatever is in that cone down to the bottom is going to be relayed back into the unit and shown on your screen in a 2D fashion. So it's really good for finding larger, you know, fish, you know, or larger groups or covering larger areas rather.
Covering
so you can if you've got it like on my boat, I keep 83 kilohertz at my or something comparable at the dash, so I can cover a larger area while I'm trolling around. And then when I go on the bow, I use 200, a little bit higher frequency. It has a narrower beam. It has about a one and three reach. So it's like if you're in 15 feet of water, it's about 5 foot wide, the beam. So it's a little bit more precise. When you see a fish on there, you can drop down and you know that you're getting in front of a fish.
Yeah.
You know, and so 2D sonar is really good for being able to see things real clearly. But it lacks in definition and target separation. So that's when a down scan or down imaging comes into play. It's a higher frequency. You really get good target separation. You can just see that, okay, that blob on the bottom that I see on 2D, is a fish. You know, it's disconnected from the bottom. And those fish that are stacked on top of each other, that's a branch, you know.
Right.
You can tell exactly what it is because it's high definition, but you tend to have a smaller beam, so smaller coverage. Yep. So you don't have nearly as much coverage when it comes to that, so as far as all around 360 degrees. So that's kind of its limitations, but it's really good for fine-tuning once you're on top of the fish. And it's my number one technology at the helm for finding actual fish on the bottom, because you have that target separation, and even if they're really close to the bottom, you can tell if they're a fish or not. And then side imaging comes into play.
Well, but that's not a high speed.
No.
Right? That's, you got to be at 5 miles an hour to be able to use that type of technology.
Exactly.
The 2D is really the only one that operates at high speed.
And that's the thing that a lot of people misunderstand when it comes to side imaging. They use it as a save-all. You know, it's not a tool that is supposed to be used for everything. It's not as effective at finding fish in particular at great distances. There's tricks to find fish on side imaging, like looking for the shadows, because the fish themselves will kind of get, you know, caught up and the contrast isn't good enough to be able to distinguish a fish from a rock on the bottom. But if that rock has a shadow that's disconnected and placed, you know, a few feet away from that what looks like a rock, it's a fish because it's suspended off the bottom.
Right.
Drive yourself crazy. Yeah.
Right. But side imaging is the indispensable tool for finding structure,
object,
and cover
habitat
on the side. So habitat, that's the key with that. And then once you get on the bow, that's when you use forward-looking sonar.
That's a great explanation. And I know that – I agree with everything, and I kind of use it in that fashion. We're all learning something here today. What I want to know, like when my phone, I got to figure out how to change the font size in my phone. It takes me 20 minutes to relearn how to do it. How in the world are you able to move from Garmin to Hummingbird to Lowrance? Do their user systems operate similarly?
No.
Are they? How
do you, not at all.
So, he did not hesitate.
So really, I have it set up so I use each one for a certain thing. I don't ever, like, I'm not going between different pages and going scrolling through different features. The Garmin unit is just for panoptics. Period. Don't use it for anything else. The Lowrance unit is pretty much, you know, those two units I use for my side scan, down scan, and my fine tune close up mapping, as well as 2D sonar. And then for running, that's my Hummingbird. I use the through hole transducer for that, maintains bottom contact. And then I use the mapping for that.
They're specific employees.
They're specific, but
that makes it easier for you to manage.
Right, exactly. But that's the thing about this technology, is you don't want to overthink it. It's all the same technology. It really is. We're talking about utilizing different frequencies, higher or lower, to be able to see what's on the bottom, you know, or what's in the water column. Mm-hmm. So you're just utilizing the same type of technology in different ways to get a different picture. You know, mega imaging is using a megahertz of frequency to be able to get a finer detail picture with better target separation and just looks really, really clean and clear. But essentially, you know, it's still just utilizing the same type of frequencies, just a little bit higher.
And
then chirp, you know, nowadays it's really popular to start using multiple frequencies at the same time, so you get a lot of different types of pictures at the same time.
Wow. Well, there's a lot to it.
A lot to it, but don't get it too complicated. You know, use a basic template, use what works for you, and that's the biggest key, is tools are meant to be used to your advantage, not to confuse you. You know, so use the ones that work to your fishing and then grow with it as you learn.
I agree. And I see that mistake a lot of guys make. They get this big, it's a computer, right? And they're reading about it online. They're learning and learning, and they forget to fish.
Right.
Right. It's not working properly, and they're stopping fishing, you know, and I see them get overwhelmed by it a lot, and we got to remember that we're out there to fish and use it as a tool.
Right.
It's very important to keep that in mind. One of the questions that I get often, and you talked about, you have a through-hole transducer mount
yeah.
for your high-speed 2D sonar application. Mm-hmm. How are you mounting? Can you give the best recommended position for the rear, the transom side imaging
yeah.
transducer?
Usually nowadays, the boat manufacturers will make a platform for it.
Okay,
it's flat, so you inside your gunnel or your hole there inside the bilge, you've got kind of a V
yes,
in most
yes.
of it. But nowadays they'll put like a kind of a flatter platform there. It's really important to make sure that there's the biggest thing when you're installing a through-hole transducer is make sure that it's as far back as possible, that you're not getting a lot of air interference from you know. Anything else, but it's really important to make sure that the epoxy doesn't get any bubbles in it, or there's no bubbles underneath the sonar transducer. That's the biggest key.
Gotcha.
You know,
okay.
Put a brick on top yeah. of it, tape the brick down, sit on the brick.
Yep.
It, you know, make sure whatever you need to
it's
do
that
it doesn't have
yep.
that bubble in it, because you're going to get some problems with that. But most of the boat manufacturers nowadays make it a little bit easier.
Well, I just this is a quick tip, because I yeah. want you to talk about how to install the side imaging
yeah.
unit. But your through-haul on occasion will get dislodged. I've mm-hmm. had this happen to me on a number of occasions, and it'll
Northern
happen
guys.
To you. Yeah. I didn't use the brick. I didn't stand on it.
Obviously, you're installing it in the dead of winter.
Yeah.
It's not warm enough to harden the material.
The first derby's in a week.
Yeah.
Got to get on the road.
Keep that brick on it.
So, but here's the deal. If it's working properly and then stops working, here's an interesting quick fix.
Yeah.
Is you fill your bilge with a little bit of water.
Really? Oh, that's right. I have heard that.
Put a little bit of water in there, and it will allow that transducer to shoot through if a little space has been. Now,
really?
if it's broke
yeah,
away
if
and
it's dangling.
Floating around, that's no good. But if it's just created space in there, you just put a little water in your bilge, and it'll shoot. But
another tip of the week.
That's
yeah.
a good one.
Luckily
right?
for him, he's spearing waves left and right, so there's no shortage of
he's
water.
He's really
in the
on
hole.
It this morning.
hey, man, I run 60 miles through Lake Erie, man. We,
yeah.
we test the gear out there, but
that's the extreme.
So now I have my side imaging transducer mounted underneath my jack plate. I know Hummingbird makes this great mm-hmm. Mounting bracket.
Yeah, they do.
For the transducer, which holds it fixed. And it's right underneath the driver's side of the transducer, and it shoots extremely well for me.
Yeah.
But is that the recommended position, or is
can
there a
be.
Better spot? Or
can be. In your instruction manual, I'm going to defer to the instruction
okay.
manuals on installation manuals on all these different brands. It's the biggest key thing is making sure that remember, you're talking about side imaging or side scan or whatever brand it is. You need to make sure that on either side, mm-hmm. it's 100% unobstructed. So if you put it someplace, you need to make sure that there's nothing in that way, whether it's a ladder or it's the lower unit itself, the jack plate, as long as
right.
it's below
nothing
all
can
of those
block
things.
That.
Yeah, gotcha. Exactly, because that's the biggest key.
You know, I've heard, and I haven't done this, but Aaron Martins mounts his lower so that he can operate his side scan at a higher speed.
Yeah.
And I have never tried that.
Mine actually operates, and this was not intentionally, mm-hmm. but mine will operate on a calm day, you know, on plane.
Wow.
Really well. But it's, yeah, and that can be beneficial, but at the same time, that's usually when I'm using my maps, my Navionics gotcha. Maps, which are really important tool for you know finding structure, you know.
Absolutely.
And when you're on plane, I don't look at the side imaging that much when I'm on plane, just because there's a lot of gaps in the
yeah, it's a lot of information,
feedback,
a lot of
yeah.
gaps.
Yeah,
I get you.
By you.
One of the things that I and this is another quick tip is to learn what fish look like at while you're on pad.
Right.
Which is really interesting because and this is a key this is what Lake Erie, you know, Ontario fish those
yeah.
they're oceans. It takes forever to try to if you idle them to try to find fish, you will be idling all day and you're going to cover just this much of the water.
Yeah.
So what I did this, you know, you find some smallmouth, you run over them. You don't idle over them, you run over them.
I haven't even done that before.
And you see how it reads on your 2D sonar.
Yeah.
You know what it looks like?
What?
Looks like that.
Yeah.
It looks like it just a sliver of a line.
Really?
Well, that's the same thing with bait fish, too. You know,
yeah.
if you're running into a creek during the fall, you can real quick figure out what position in the creek those bait fish schools are, you know, those mm-hmm. shad are, by running in there, all of a sudden you'll start seeing these little black, you know, or colored lines on your 2D sonar, you know, just kind of vertically yeah. suspended off the bottom. And that's schools of bait fish as you're running over them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that was huge for me. And they're the ones that are usually catchable are on the bottom. And if you weren't aware to look for it, mm-hmm. you would think that's nothing. But you're just catching a part of the fish through the cone in an instant.
Right.
And it just shows up as a little tiny line
nice
on the bottom. So it'll save you a ton of time when
yeah.
you're out there. So, hey, man, that sonar, you've become an expert on sonar.
I'm not an expert. But I really enjoy the technology, and it really helps me, you know, and I've incorporated a lot into my fishing. I know the technology well enough to be able to share my knowledge on it, but still there's a lot to learn like anything else.
Well, there's no question about it, and you heard it here first of Garmin, Lowrance, Humminbird. Humminbird's the best.
I learned a lot.
We learned a lot. But all kidding aside, great having you here. Guys want to watch your show. Where and when can they watch your show?
So you would ask me when my show airs. it's on NBC Sports and Sportsman's Channel. I get texts all the time of people having lunch at sports bars
yep.
on Tuesdays. So I think it's around lunchtime on Tuesdays. They're eating their wings and I'm in the background. But
awesome.
And then we're also on Sportsman's Channel, and then you can also watch it streaming on waypointtv.com, which is a streaming app that has just hunting and fishing. It's pretty spectacular.
How appropriate, Waypoint yeah. TV.
Yeah, right, right. It is appropriate. Yeah.
So what do you got coming up on the show? What are the next few episodes?
Well, we haven't started filming for season 6 yet. We
okay.
usually wait till the end of the year.
Okay.
Usually after ICAST to yep. start doing stuff. But right now we've been doing a lot on the Tennessee River, you know, actually mm-hmm. utilizing, you know, sonar technology to go find fish. We did an episode with Andy Morgan out there.
Nice.
We did an episode just Joey and I going out there and dissecting some of the areas that I fish on Chickamauga, and you know, even in the dead of summer, you know, dog days of summer, we had a really good episode out there. And then we also did a little bit of fishing below the Nickajack Dam, which was a lot of fun.
Nice.
For smallmouth.
Nice.
And meanmouth and largemouth and spots.
Meanmouths.
Oh yeah, all of them.
You ever caught one of those?
I have. I've you know, occasionally. But were they grouped up there behind the dam?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It must have been fun.
It's crazy.
You just money up on them.
Oh, yeah. It's nuts. I mean, it's loud, but it's fun.
Do they have the discharge horns? Like, I remember fishing
do,
below
yeah.
the Wilson Dam, and they would blow those horns, I guess, when the lock would open, and you know, it would let us know that more current was coming our way.
You better not be down there right now. I'll tell you that.
Ooh.
it is bad.
Is it running?
Oh, they're running like 180 cubic feet per second. It's 180,000.
Yeah, that's yeah, crazy. Wow. Well, I don't know. We were – when the Susquehanna River was up over its banks and they closed the Bassmaster tournament down, the first place Tommy Biffle went was he ran all the way to the dam on the Conowingo.
Yeah.
I don't care about them rocks.
I can wade in this water. My shorts are long enough.
Well, I mean, that's the dam's where it's at. Extra current, no matter what mm-hmm. the water looks like.
Current is the great neutralizer, we have learned from
that's,
Rick Klein.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
And we learned it here at the Classic. The wind blowing against the current will stop the flow, slow the flow.
It'll
slow
some
the
waves
bite,
too.
You know? And,
apparently so.
Increase the waves.
Yeah.
That can certainly be a factor. But, hey, man, I appreciate you taking the time
hey.
To be with us, buddy.
I'm honored, man. I always love hanging out with you guys.
I learned a lot, dude.
Hey.
I'm going to put my – I usually use my 8-foot flip stick as a depth finder.
That's good,
so
too.
I think I'm going to graduate
There's
a little bit.
There's nothing better than a flipping stick for finding hard bottom.
You are
yeah. – yeah. You heard it. Bash U alum. From the first year
Amazing.
Of Bass University.
Testify.
Yeah, sonar. The great Miles Burkoff. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
Good luck
Thanks,
rest
dude.
Of this year
awesome.
Out on tour.
Appreciate it. Appreciate
awesome.
You guys.
Pete Gluzek, Bass University TV.